The Guardian.
Hello all, James Richardson here, and before we get started with today's edition of Football Weekly, I'm going to point you in the direction of our sponsor Squarespace. For more about building beautiful websites, go to squarespace.com. And now, on with the show. Football Weekly Extra. Today, Champions League at the Emirates. After initial success, MSN sees Arse KO'd, ensure Wenger will again be MSN in the next round. Meanwhile, English winner in Europe shock, Man City triumph in Kiev. Have that, critics of their weekend off, although given their winter break, doesn't that mean Kiev should have won 67-0? Elsewhere, Juventus-Bayern football match, are they at it again? We gurgle over the thrilling 2-2 in Turin. We have some League Cup excitement. No, listener, we can't wait either. And we get a full preview of the weekend's Premier League action, all in this Football Weekly Extra. OK, welcome to you, listener. And welcome to you, Raphael Honigstein.
Hello, James.
All dolled up in your smart suit. Hey, also looking fine, James Horncastle.
Welcome.
And with a cheeky grin on his face, an impish smile, Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
A demeanour which is in no way unconnected with the six chocolates you've just eaten while we're waiting for Raphael.
Yeah, Raphael, I'm rushing.
You certainly are.
I'm feeling very underdressed, though, actually, because you've got your BT Sport duds on for later this evening, and I'm looking slovenly in a hoodie.
But by your usual standards, dressed up.
That's right, listeners, that's what you came for. But while we're here, let's have a bit of chat about the Champions League midweek action. Boom. So many places we could start. Alphabetically, let's do it alphabetically with Arsenal-Barcelona. Wow. First half, Arsenal looked really good, and Barcelona seemed nothing special. Did you think at that point, well, that was my impression, did you think at that point, wow, Arsenal could actually do it? Or were you waiting for the Catalans to just kick it up and do them?
Yeah, it was more of the latter, really. I think Arsenal did really well. I think the accusation, and frequently voiced on this pod, has been that they struggle without the ball. I think they did really well without the ball. And ironically, they lost with the ball. That's why Arsene Wenger was really frustrated, because the first goal came from a counter-attack, the second goal came from a penalty where they had almost cleared the ball. So they lost in a very un-Arsenal-like fashion, even though the result was probably expected all along.
Mm. Interesting stats about Barcelona's first and second halves. Did you see this? Currently in the Liga, they're 9 points clear of Real Madrid, yet had every game finished at halftime, they'd actually be 6 points behind.
Well, they didn't have a shot on target in the first half. And as Rafa was saying, Arsenal impressive without the ball. I thought Giroud and Ozil were quite selfless in dropping off and kind of stopping the passing angles to Busquets.
Giroud was especially unselfish when he passed to his invisible friend.
Yeah. Well, Rodders 79 wanted us to discuss that. What do you think he was trying to do?
I think he thought Theo Walcott was coming around his outside and played a no-look pass in that direction, expecting Walcott to run onto it. But Walcott had ideas of his own and ran in on his inside instead. Quite why Giroud didn't just bear down a goal and shoot himself, I'm not quite sure.
Shoot himself. Oh, shoot himself.
Have a shot at the goal himself rather than shoot himself. Perhaps if he had shot himself with a gun, it wouldn't have made a huge amount of difference. He was quite wasteful. I think it was Arsenal's finishing ultimately that let them down, because they should really certainly have scored at least one goal in the first half, if not a couple. Barcelona had a couple of chances towards the very end of the first half where I think Suarez missed a very easy headed opportunity, and there was a bit of a mess up. Was it Neymar? But, you know, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain had a glorious chance to open the scoring for Arsenal and absolutely made a dog's breakfast of it. And that cost them, because, like Rafa said, there was a kind of a sad inevitability about them losing once they hadn't opened the scoring at half time. Because as the game progressed and they chased the ball, they wilted and they got tired, and errors were inevitable.
Yeah, and Barcelona now feels so comfortable with their 2-0 lead that Enrique instructed Piqué to get a second booking so he'll miss the second leg. Is that a fair reading of what happened there? And is that what Flamini was trying to do when he went on Messi?
What an impact substitution that was. Yeah. 41 seconds later. I have a little bit of sympathy for Well, actually, not for Arsene Wenger, because I don't even... Was Coquelin injured? Why did he take off Flamini? Why did he bring him on? I thought that was a little bit of a perplexing substitution. And also, Mertesacker's got to be at fault a little bit there for that cushion pass out to him. I thought it kind of sold Flamini short, someone who's just come on and is lacking in these games anyway. It was disastrous. You kind of knew it was going to happen, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. That was Arsenal-Barcelona. Is it over? 2-0?
No, I think Barcelona will score some more at Camp Nou. And it'll probably end up 5 or 6-0, maybe 1.
Right.
Wenger says they've got a 5% chance. But statistically, apparently, it's only 3%.
So there's a chance, but a very, very, very slim one.
There's always a chance. Okay. Looking at Spain's results, though, in the Europa League and Champions League last week and this, you probably saw the stat. 6 wins, 1 draw, no defeats, 15 goals scored, none conceded. Compare that.
Not the best league in the world, though, is it?
Yeah. Compare that to the best league in the world, which is, what, 6 games, 1 win, 2 draws and 3 defeats. And I must admit, I haven't added up how many goals were scored or conceded. But that one win, Barry, what were the odds from Man City?
I expected them to win. I didn't expect them to win in such emphatic fashion. Dynamo Kiev obviously just come off a 2-month winter break, so they're a bit rusty, and they looked a bit rusty. But Manchester City were huge, very cohesive, very impressive. They had their sort of whole spine back playing together, possibly, for the first time in a long time. Joe Hart, Vincent Kompany, Yaya Toure was firing in all his many cylinders. Sergio Aguero and David Silva all on the field at the same time. That doesn't happen too often with them.
That's true.
Sergio Aguero's goal was superb. Yaya's goal was great. And
Yaya Toure's goal, it was kind of like an iron tribute. It was like an iron Robin 45 single played at 33. It's kind of lumbered towards. Younger listeners may require some explanation on that one, but yeah. And Silva's with that long build up, that kind of Barcelona-esque build up.
Yeah, right. Great hold up play from Aguero in the build up to that, where he basically just takes it on, does the back heel to Sterling, and then Sterling megs the ball across goal. They could have scored 7 or 8 last night. They were exceptional. I thought Aguero was through on goal a few times, skewed it wide. Yaya Toure had a header that he nudged just wide. Yeah, the Dinamo really weren't at the races.
The stat is remarkable, but supposedly Man City are the first English club to win a Champions League first leg since 2012. Yeah, furrow that brow. It's been doing the rounds.
Wow.
Exactly. Anyway, so it was worth it. Resting all their players in the FA Cup?
Of course not. It's ridiculous
to
rest them.
And once again, they're not even going to bother taking part in the Premier League this weekend while they have the League Cup final against Liverpool.
Well, will they field a team for that? I don't know. Is it worth it?
I'm not sure. I'm genuinely not sure, because I don't get the League Cup or the League Cup final by consequence. Jonathan Liu in The Telegraph actually writing a little article yesterday, I think, saying why do we have the League Cup, which is a question which has long perplexed me. Why have a League Cup, especially when you talk about fixture congestion and all that stuff, and how to boost the FA Cup? Why have a sister competition that effectively detracts some of the attention from it, that creates extra fixtures? That I just don't understand.
I couldn't disagree with Jonathan on that one. I'm beginning to wonder why football teams bother playing matches at all. Because, fans are quite happy to argue with each other over net spends, transfers. Football clubs clearly don't like playing matches. It gets in the way of, their sponsorship deals.
And players can get injured.
Players get injured. Mm-hmm. Their value decreases. So, we could just not have any football tournaments whatsoever. And I would imagine the football industry would continue to trundle along quite happily and profitably regardless. And the attendance of fans at matches, it has been noted in recent weeks that the ticket money, clubs don't need that. So if there's no matches, the fans, they could go to the cinema. They'll probably have a better time, because fans at matches tend to be miserable all the time anyway. Mm. All they ever do is complain. So let's not have any football at all. And the clubs can continue just to chunter along, as I said.
Right. Listen, Barry, the FIFA election isn't until tomorrow. I don't know if you have...
Well, I think if I was parachuted in as a candidate, yeah, I would probably go straight to the top of the betting as the one with the most integrity and the best ideas for change.
Hey, this League Cup final, yeah, you know, James and Rapper?
Not for me.
No? No,
actually, it's not true. I mean, I sort of enjoy the half serious, half not serious. Let's play because we've got nothing else to do.
Where does it stand then for you? Okay, it's above the Community Shield.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Above the Emirates Cup.
Yes.
Below the Europa League, though. Yes.
Much below. Yeah,
much below. Absolutely. Okay. All right.
Well, I mean, I'll watch it and I'll enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I went to it a couple of years ago when Sunderland made it to the final and got well beaten by Manchester City. I don't think anyone was particularly devastated that they lost. And I don't think, you know, it's nice to win a trophy of any kind. But, I think if you offered City fans the league or the Champions League now, but they would never win the Capital One Cup again, they'd bite your hand off.
Jose Mourinho loves the League Cup. Mm. He loves it.
I bet Klopp would love to win this because it would be silverware, wouldn't it? And, of course, Liverpool, they like a bit of Man City. Their best performance under Klopp was that remarkable 4-1.
That was maybe a bit of a false dawn. I think City will not be as naive attacking Liverpool on neutral ground as they were at home, where they always sort of play their own game and expect everybody to just defend deep and do nothing, and Liverpool had seen them coming quite literally. I think this would be a much tighter, more attritional contest.
Mm. James?
I seem to remember the problems that Liverpool's front three caused City's back four in that game, particularly the centre-backs when they were trying to play out from the back. And I think however good City were last night, I thought Otamendi had a good first half. Maybe second half, not so good. I thought he was perhaps a little bit at fault for the goal. Headed clearance, went down to Bielski, scored. I think that's something where City still have to improve. There's still a bit of a nagging doubt about them there. So, and Klopp's teams, well, Klopp's Liverpool so far performed in the big games, haven't they? Aside from, you say, that United game they lost against Chelsea, against City, got big results. So, and I agree with Rafa. I think in terms of kick-starting a winning mentality and getting some, enhancing the belief within this team that they can go and do something. Because that's what, as I was saying, Jose Mourinho, that's why he really valued the League Cup. It got them started in winning things. It is important.
Hmm. Well, certainly ahead of last night's game against Kiev, I would agree with you, Rafa, but they they seem to have rediscovered a bit of verve, City.
Well, I mean, they were playing against very ordinary opposition.
Right, and Liverpool and so on.
I don't think we should take City's result last night for granted.
Yeah.
Because it's the kind of game that they've screwed up in the past. And, you know, we saw Arsenal against Monaco last season. And we've seen teams that have had winter breaks or still be on winter breaks upset no less than Manchester United, their next door neighbours.
Right, good shout. Oh, I'm just noticing City before that Kiev game had actually lost three games in a row, Spurs, Leicester and Chelsea.
Wow.
Anyway, so it's a big game for legacies, for closing eras, for beginning eras. It's a big game on Sunday, and shame on us for doubting the importance of the League Cup final. Now, that's enough for part one. There's still loads of Champions League to come and other sort of chat about things like Man United Arsenal, which we skipped merrily past earlier. Stay tuned and we'll be back with some of that after this. Now, Juventus Bayern. What a game that was on Tuesday evening, Rafa.
That was a game. Wow.
A game of two halves in a very real sense. Juve completely dominated. I mean, they were
in their own backyard.
In their own backyard. Bent over.
They were dominated.
Yeah. They were.
The old lady giving a bit of a spank.
But then what happened? Because then that 13-minute comeback, what happened?
Well, Hernandez happened, which was the biggest surprise of the season. Mm. You know, when he came on, everybody thought, ha-ha, it's game over.
Mm.
But he injected real sense of energy, and they just slightly altered their rhythm. They weren't dropping off as deep. They were just a bit more aggressive, trying to win the ball back a bit earlier. and going direct, asking the proverbial questions at the behind the fence, and they didn't have great answers.
No.
Because they're very inexperienced, and it showed with both goals. Also, I thought that Manuel Neuer's goal kick, which was something that people in Germany haven't really talked about, strangely enough, to Lahm, was absolutely criminal. Played him in a lot of trouble. 10, 15 minutes to go. You know, this is, I think, sort of the negative part or the downside of being such a, having this passing and building up from the back ingrained in you to the extent that a goalkeeper sees a right back in an open position for a second and immediately thinks, oh, I have to play a lofted ball to him instead of just whacking it and taking longer, you know, to eat a bit on time.
Well, having come back in roaring fashion and had chances to win the game at the end, Juventus, the press on Wednesday morning were full of courage of the old lady and all this kind of thing. I was surprised, though, that they didn't take Allegri more to task for the way that he kind of threw away the first half. Or do you think it was the players who got stage fright, James?
I think it was the players. He set up this game a little bit like when they played Napoli the other Friday night in a 4-4-2. You know, asking basically the Pogba on the left and Cuadrado on the right to really help out the fullbacks against a similar kind of threat from wide areas. And the strikers and midfielders helped out the defenders so much that they kind of forgot they were strikers and midfielders. And curiously, Bayern had 71% possession in that first half, and yet Juventus still had relatively good chances. You know, in the second minute, the ball over the top for Mandzukic, he almost rushes it, snatches at it. They felt that they should have had a penalty as well. I think these were all borderline decisions. They thought, for example, that Müller's goal, that Lewandowski was interfering with play, he was in the line of sight of Buffon. These are all, I would say, clutching at straws.
Yeah, I mean, the first half performance, there was only one team in it. But again...
And Rafa was right to mention Hernandez, who seemed to take more risks than Marchisio. But game-changing substitutions from Allegri, who just seems to be able to read the game really well and see what's required in the second half, because both substitutes, Sturaro and Morata, combined for the equaliser.
Mm. Well, he changed the game, but possibly didn't change the tie, because Bayern go back to Munich with the two away goals. How worried should Juventus be then ahead of this second leg in 3 weeks? Bayern have won all 15 matches at home in all competitions this season. They've only conceded 5 times. Wow.
Well, I've got, in a cold light of day, they should be worried because it was not the result they wanted, not the result they needed. But it take, of course, great optimism from the fact that A, they came back, B, they showed that this Bayern defence is actually fairly fragile if you put more pressure on them. And I think they might be encouraged to play a slightly more open game. So, okay, of course we have to defend, but we have to score. Mm. Probably one goal might not be enough even. So let's make this a bit more open game. Let's take that control that Bayern had and make it a bit more hectic. They play with long balls. They disrupted the rhythm. I think they need to play like that from the outset, make it almost a sort of a more...
You're saying un-European,
yes. Yeah. A more chaotic, slightly more open game to really throw off Bayern's passing game, because their game in possession was as good as they've played for a long time. They hadn't been this fluid and this in control.
Since they played an Italian side last time, they only smashed Roma.
But that was last season. Yeah. And, you know, this year's Bayern hasn't actually been that comfortable in possession. They've been a little bit more direct, a little bit more going through the flanks, but the way they controlled the midfield with the two fullbacks moving inside was very impressive.
Pep was, after the game, was saying it was one of the most special nights of his career, the performance, because there was a lot of people saying, look, after 60 minutes, you kind of switched off. What was behind that? Was it a physical thing, or did you just get complacent? And he was like, what? I didn't expect to come here and win 7-0. I didn't expect Juventus to be in their own half for all the game and not basically create anything. It's quite respectful of Juventus, but still. A lot of people drawing the comparison in the papers in Italy and in Germany of when Bayern went to San Siro and got a 2-2 draw in 2007 and thought that was a great result. And then Seedorf and Inzaghi happened at the in Munich, but that was a very different Bayern team compared with this Bayern team.
Fair point. Rafa, how's the situation between Pep and Bayern? Is there any risk that that might break down in the next couple of weeks?
Well, if they were to not get knocked out, I think the repercussions would be quite severe, because there would be a sense that they've thrown this tie away. But if they go through, if they play to similar standards, they should go through. Actually, the club are trying to find a nice ending to the whole story. They don't want aggravation. They don't want Pep to leave in a slanging match and this negativity dragging on. So to make all that happen, advancing to the quarterfinals is an absolute muster.
Right, OK. Well, coming up this weekend, Juventus have a massive game, the Derby of Italy against Inter. We'll be showing that on Sunday night. Woohoo! And Juve, you recall, are locked in this title tussle with Napoli, who will be facing Fiorentina on the Monday. But that's a huge game on Sunday night, James.
It is, because it looks like Inter have returned to form somewhat after the blip at the start of the year. Good win against Sampdoria with Mourinho in the crowd. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Juventus are physically after that game against Bayern, because when you don't have the ball and you're running and running and running, it can be quite tiring, quite difficult to recover from.
Bayern, meantime, have to go to Wolfsburg. That's a big game in the Bundesliga.
It's not quite as big as it was last year when they went there and got absolutely whacked 4-1 after the winter break, and Wolfsburg were runners-up and looked really good. This year they've been struggling. I think also the fact that they're still involved in the Champions League, had a good result against Ghent. Their eyes a bit off the league this season. But it is not going to be an easy game. I think my sense is that Guardiola will rotate a little bit, protect the likes of Robben, maybe even Alaba, who's so essential to this team now because there's no centre-backs, and maybe it's the kind of result where Bayern would be happy to live with a draw.
It was against Wolfsburg in the earlier match this season that Lewandowski got his 5 goals in 9 minutes, Rafa.
As a substitute, no less.
That was crazy. Right, and also they got an 8-point margin, and Dortmund are going to be playing Hoffenheim, who are just in penultimate place. Mainz host Leverkusen, but without Bayer Leverkusen coach, do you want to just say his name?
Roger Schmidt.
There you go. Who's got a 5-game ban for that thing we were talking about on Monday. Wow, that seems a little bit harsh.
Well, I'm not sure it is harsh. I think if you refuse to come off when the referee sends you to the stand and force effectively the game to be suspended after 2 warnings, I think he has to be punished.
You're right. It's not harsh at all. It's absolutely fair.
Some would say it's lenient.
Lenient, in fact. Anyway, there you go, Lucas W. That's a bit of German football chat. There's another Champions League match we haven't mentioned, and it is, James,
PSV against Atletico, 0-0.
I watched a bit of that, actually.
Yeah? Were you enthralled?
It was not a bad game, I'd say. Not a bad game. I mean, Atletico are very... they're not easy on the eye. And PSV tried hard. They created some sort of half chances. The crowd were up for it. It was okay. It was an old-fashioned... European Champions Cup tie in many ways, but a little bit low on quality.
Hello listeners, producer Ben here with details of an offer from Cornerstone, the official shaving partner of Football Weekly. You all know that shopping for razor blades is dull, as are the final shaves from the last razor in your pack. So why not save yourself time and money and get a closer shave than ever before with an uber sharp, uber smart German engineered razor of the year from Cornerstone. Just visit cornerstone.co.uk/guardian, enter your initials, pick the delivery scheme that suits you best, and your shaving products will be delivered right to your door. Because you listen to Football Weekly, Cornerstone are giving you £10 of your first delivery. And what's more, if you're not 100% satisfied, they'll give a full refund with absolutely no questions asked. So head to cornerstone.co.uk/guardian to pick up a personally engraved heavy-duty handle and 6 award-winning blades from just 4 of your English pounds. That's cornerstone.co.uk/guardian.
Barry, the reason that Rafa, James and myself were all in suits is because we're doing the Europa League goals show.
I'm aware of that.
My enthusiasm for tonight, which was previously at quite literally massive levels because of some of the clashes involved, has been slightly skewed by Van Gaal bringing the whole concept of horniness into it. I mean, there's 2 things I don't want to put
Why
together. It's horny and Van Gaal. What?
Why bring me into it?
No.
No, are you being unfair here? Because this is a classic Dutch and German expression.
All right, what does it mean?
It means horny only in a literal sense, but what it really means is to be desperate to score goals. So really to feel that you have to
desperate to score. Desperate to score. I think it means the same thing in Germany.
No, but desperate to score. Yeah, of course it means the same, but
they're gagging for it. Yeah.
Yes. But you are offended by the off-pitch connotations.
I just, I'm not offended by it. But anyway, and I'm not offended.
By the mental image of Louis van Gaal's horn.
No, do you know what? I'm actually troubled by
it's golden horn.
he called him. Oh. No, he did.
I am troubled.
That's what Robin said.
I am troubled by the golden fact that he came out with that, and now all we've got from here to kick off is horny banter, horny banter, horny, horny, horny banter.
I think I honestly believe that Jurgen Klopp would be very happy to hear that, because that's been one of the expressions he's used for years and years and years.
Oh, really?
Until it got to the point where he himself felt I couldn't use it anymore. Guile is the German word.
Oh.
Or Torgeil, horny for goals.
Use guile. Mm. We need more guile.
There you go. Yeah. But hey, Man United, after they try and come back from that extraordinary 2-1 defeat against Midtjylland.
I'm sorry to say, but if you really want to be troubled by Louis van Gaal images, Bayern.
Is there a website or something?
No. At Bayern, he talked about the importance of still being physically active with your wife.
Oh, yeah.
Even in your 60s.
Well, that's natural. There's nothing wrong with that at all. Nothing wrong with that at all.
I did feel for Mrs. van Gaal last night.
Oh. She wasn't there, or
it's
what?
Not the problem that he is, of course, horny enough, but he wants his team to be hornier.
Right. Good. Anyway, so after this Midtjylland business on Thursday night, Lord knows how this will go. But if you're listening to this pod early, there's time to find out by joining us for our special Europa League goal show. But anyway, after that, Sunday, 2:00, what a huge game as they take on Arsenal. So many classic clashes between these two. Danny Welbeck, could he be key?
Look, I mean, I think Arsenal have got to win this game.
Are you suggesting that he's not?
No, I mean, come on, he made an impact. I mean, some impact against Leicester. But yeah, Arsenal haven't won at Old Trafford in close to a decade.
Yeah, 2002, longer than a decade. Yeah. And in the league.
And the only surviving member of that team was a late substitute who came on. He didn't have the same impact as he did this week. It was Matthew Flamini. So, I mean, it's been said before in the last couple of years, Arsenal haven't had as good an opportunity to kind of go and beat this Manchester United side. And they really should. If they want to stay in that conversation for the title and win the title, they have to win on Sunday.
Rafa?
Yeah, I agree.
Could. Anything you're particularly looking forward to seeing? Perhaps a better performance from Mesut Ozil than the one he furnished us with on Tuesday.
Yeah, it was a bit disappointing. I mean, I guess going back and defending with eight men around your box is never going to be his natural game. I think he did well enough adapting to that. But with the ball, I think you'd expect a bit more. And, you know, it was really Arsenal saying, we cannot really play football against the side. Let's do what most teams who come here do, which is just really defend and try to play a bit on the counter. And it can work, but you needed, I think, everybody to be really at the top of their game when they were in possession. And Ozil was all right, but he didn't have that real impact.
Mm. Barry, Arsenal to end that long winless run at Old Trafford?
I'm not so sure of the will, to be honest. I don't fancy them for this game.
Nice 1-1 draw.
Yeah, maybe.
Andy Hamilton says, what is Barry's top betting tip this weekend in the Premier League?
Oh, I don't really have one, to be honest. I haven't.
There you go, Andy. You asked, we answered.
Sorry. I think Sunderland might do a number on West Ham, at West Ham.
Ooh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Big Sam getting
but
all over.
I don't know.
Sam Derby.
I have no idea what the odds are on that happening, so I have no idea whether it would be a shrewd investment or not.
Right. Well, let's talk about that game, because that's the game that actually kicks off the weekend. Big Sam making his first return to
He took charge straight after Sunderland played West Ham at home. That was Dick Advocaat's last match in charge, and that, weirdly, one of Sunderland's better performances this season. They drew 2-2. It was a game they scored a couple of goals, and Dick Advocaat was so happy he cried.
Yeah.
Then he left the next day, announced his resignation, and Big Sam took over. So Big Sam, he's had his derby at Newcastle, which he won. That was his second game in charge. And I fancy that You know, West Ham on their day are far better side than Sunderland, and West Ham on their day are far better side than Sunderland on their day. But they're quite erratic, and Sunderland have a bit of momentum behind them.
Well, they beat Man United last time.
Drawn with Liverpool, beat Manchester United, and I think they might win this game.
Wow. How are they going to stop Dimitri Payet,
though? Well, that's the million-dollar question. I'm not sure. But he is a worry, obviously. But I just think that Sunderland are going to win this game.
All right.
Not something Didier Deschamps is worrying about, by the sounds of it.
Yeah. Because he's too busy worrying about Koulibaly.
Koulibaly, yes.
I've Go on, tell the story. Tell the story.
Deschamps was on French TV on Sunday, and he was talking about the France squad ahead of the Euros, and he's like, oh, I'm monitoring this really great centre-back in Serie A at the moment, Napoli, Kalidou Koulibaly, and Twitter just went into uproar because Koulibaly, he grew up in France, but he's declared for Senegal and has made a number of caps for Senegal.
Five caps already.
And then he was also, let's say, indifferent to Dimitri Payet being
amazing,
in the squad and playing at the Euros, which, you know...
It's a classic French thing, though, to have a supremely talented attacking midfielder that you just don't bother picking. Yeah.
Snub him.
Yeah. Snub him, yeah. the French.
And what is the reason for this total indifference to Dimitri Payet?
Well, they've got a lot of other good midfielders, to be fair.
There is that, and I think...
They're French, they don't need reasons.
Well, there you are. I think at major tournaments as well, they're conscious of the group and good characters being in the squad. And I think not at West Ham, but perhaps in his time at Saint-Etienne and Marseille, he wasn't always the most easygoing character around the camp, apparently.
Mm. All right. How
they
about
don't want
that?
Any disruption.
Here's a stat about this weekend's clash between West Ham and Sunderland. I think she could put Hammers into fifth place. For the Black Cats, it could see them rise out of their current position in the bottom three to the giddy heights of 17th, which is 17th as high as they've been all season. Wow. They were briefly 17th in December. Other than that, they spent the entire campaign in the bottom three. Now, quick corollary here, according to producer Ben, I haven't gone back and checked, but if true, that's quite a remarkable state of affairs, Barry.
I'm not so sure that it is, to be honest.
True.
I would say it's an entirely expected state of affairs.
Oh, I see.
They were second from bottom when Allardyce took over. They're still second from bottom. But they're only a point from safety. I'm sure we all remember in 2014, they were 7 points from safety with only six games to go. So they're
the last year.
Comparatively... comfortable position this season.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting
situation. And as I say, they look to be getting a bit of momentum behind them. But, you know, let's not forget, this is Sunderland. They're capable of being absolutely dreadful on the day. There are obviously off-field issues that we can't really talk about. Adam Johnson's case is ongoing, but he's obviously no longer a Sunderland player. And he was one of the better players before he got sacked.
But they do still have Jermaine Defoe with his six goals in his last seven games.
Yes, and he's obviously returning to his old club as well.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Nice one. It's an interesting situation down the bottom. Of course, Newcastle are in there on goal difference behind Norwich, but they'll have to sit this one out. They would have been playing Man City, but the League Cup. And who else is that? Well, Aston Villa. Aston Villa are away at Stoke. We'll find opportunity for the Potters to rediscover some of their lost verve.
Does this mean now that Newcastle will have had a 3 week break?
A little bit less, because there is a midweek round which they are taking part in with a trip to Stoke on Wednesday the 2nd of March, Barry. But yeah, an ample time for them to sit back and reflect and possibly redress one or two of the issues facing them.
I think Sunderland and West Ham were both in Dubai or on sort of sunshine training expeditions, so they might have had a kickabout over there.
Nice.
This is the thing that sometimes gets overlooked when people say there's no winter break in the Premier League. There is, for a lot of teams, there is actually a big winter break of 10 days, the FA Cup.
Right. Man City, for example. In other news about teams down the bottom, so you've got Aston Villa and... Yeah. Then Sunderland, we talked about that. Newcastle aren't playing. And then above them, you've got these three teams, Norwich and Swansea and Bournemouth. Bournemouth 4 points clear. They are at Watford... Two of the other teams, Norwich and Swansea, just above the drop, they're facing the top two.
Yeah, Norwich coming out this week and saying that Alex Neil's job's safe. He'll be at the club even if they get relegated.
Right. Are they going to get relegated, James? They've taken 1 point from the last 18. Yeah. Ooh, they've conceded 18 goals in those six matches.
Doesn't look good. Unless they've had, well, some considerable time off, because they haven't played since that Arsenal game. They weren't involved in the FA Cup, so Claudio Ranieri gave his players a week off, and he himself went to Rome.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, with his family. And also, we've seen, this is a stat that must be of concern to Norwich fans. Mahrez and Vardy have scored more goals between them than Norwich's entire team.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then Swansea, they got to travel to White Hart Lane, where Spurs will be looking to win their fifth game in a row. Wow, Swansea haven't won in three. Although, I read, of course, Spurs are taking on Fiorentina in a huge match at White Hart Lane Thursday night. No Harry Kane. What's happened to Harry?
He's got a nose injury, I think. I think he picked that up against Crystal Palace, but he should be okay for the game against Swansea.
Wait, since when is a nose injury in this day of titanium facing?
Oh. Yeah. But Dembele's suffered a pretty bad injury to his groin. He's going to be out for about 2 or 3 weeks. Might miss the North London derby.
Can he wear a mask? Disease.
On his groin?
Yeah.
I'd like to see it.
Okay.
Or not.
A merkin. A bejeweled merkin, preferably. Anyway, well, those are big games, and I'm just saying it does look bleak for those two teams, and better for the likes of Sunderland. If they do come up with any kind of result, that, you know, they might be moving out, and the likes of Norwich, Swansea dropping in. Wow. It's all very, very exciting. We've talked about Arsenal against Man United up at Old Trafford. We haven't looked at one or two of your posts and tweets and that kind of thing, listeners. Johnny Five Eyes, the worryingly named Johnny Five Eyes, asks us to talk about seismic events, as he describes them, at Bristol Rovers. You'll have seen that Bristol Rovers have been taken over by a Jordanian, Wael Al-Qadi, who's a member of the Jordanian FA. And supposedly this is going to... Him buying a 92% stake means that they'll finally build a new stadium that they've been waiting a decade or longer for, which is a huge thing if you've seen where they play and where they train. So good luck with that one, Gas. In an interesting bit of symmetry, Bristol Rovers were, of course, founded as the Black Arabs.
Yes.
One of their many names.
Why?
Oh, I don't know. I'll have to go and look that up.
Bristol, home of Blackbeard.
That's so true, isn't it? Have you got any other Bristol facts from our recent mission to
Are they the
Bristol?
Gas heads or is
gas,
the other
yeah, lot? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Home of Mesfetak?
There you go.
Yeah.
And so Portishead?
Massive Attack.
Tricky.
New video has got Rosamund Pike in from Gonga.
All right. I saw that today.
Yeah.
I thought the video was interesting, but the music.
I missed the start of this conversation. What are you discussing?
Rosamund Pike being in Massive Attack's latest video.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. I missed that because producer Ben was just revealing the reason that Rovers were called the Black Arabs.
Yeah.
The local rugby team, I think from which they were Scion or Sion, were called the Arabs, and their kit was predominantly black, rather than any being any Moorish influence on
them. Okay, but which begs the question, yeah. Why
were the rugby team called the Arabs? Well, I know that's a subject for Rugby Weekly Extra, not this show. Hey! Here's Klein Brigante, who's responding to our chat about Aprilia the other day. Aprilia, Barry. Yeah, I knew that would get you back to life. Aprilia, you saw him riding his horse in his dinosaur costume, did you?
His horse and his hoverboard.
Exactly, his hoverboard as well. Also dressed in a dinosaur costume.
But he appears to have two separate dinosaur costumes.
He's Tino Aprilia.
Yeah, both T-Rex, which... sort of shows a lack of imagination. You know, I'd have gone Triceratops, Brontosaurus, maybe something for my away dinosaur kit.
Okay.
Because if you're riding a horse...
Yes.
...and you have to have the reins...
Yes.
...you've got, like, tiny T-Rex arms.
Well, this was a subject of much discussion after he posted a picture of himself on his very enjoyable Twitter account on the hoverboard in what looked to me like the T-Rex one, because, again, there were the small arms, and you worry about how that works.
Well, he's got the big tail, so that's his balance.
Anyway, one thing that we were discussing on Monday was why he was wearing a dinosaur costume on the horse. There was a story that the horse was really fond of dinosaurs and maybe watched Barney. That was the... Yeah. But anyway, Klein Brigante posts in to say, no, look, the facts are these. Aprilia had a birthday party for one of his kids and dressed up as Barney. The horse loved it. And ever since then, he's enamoured with dinosaurs. There you go. Almost at the end now, listeners. We haven't. There's a couple of big games that we haven't discussed. One is kind of West Brom against Palace, the Tony Pulis derby. Yeah, you know. Hey, Bolasie's back. And Palace looking, you know, like they mean business again. They had that win in the FA Cup against Spurs. But if you don't fancy that, Rafa, what do you make of Saints-Chelsea? Ooh, a couple of Dutch managers going at it.
Horny for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They probably will be, won't they?
Well, this was one of
the... It's a double Dutch game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Most momentous games of the season in October, wasn't it? It was 3-1 at the Bridge to Southampton and Jose Mourinho's seven-minute rant on Sky Sports after that.
Of course.
When I think John Terry was back in the team for that after being dropped. Was it the same with Hazard as well? They played Porto before it. And they took the lead through Willian and then they lost 3-1. And it was the game when he brought on Matic only to bring off Matic soon afterwards. Mm. And I think, shall we say that, things have stabilised under Goose. Some big 5-1 wins this month. Three times they've won 5-1 in the last month. But I don't think they'll be as prolific in front of this Southampton defence, which has gone 9 hours and 14 minutes without conceding a goal. And when you consider some of the players that they lost in the summer, you know, Alderweireld, Schneiderlin, to have that defensive record this season is quite astonishing.
Fraser Forster. Oof.
I reckon they've got nothing to play for in the league, Chelsea, and that could easily affect their performances. Also, the kind of squads that Hiddink will be fielding. There is absolutely no chance they get anywhere.
Any sign of Pato? Nope, no sign of Pato.
Because
they signed him.
Yeah.
No, I've
not
seen
fit enough, apparently.
Well, yeah.
And also, Costa's been in such great form on Hiddink. 8 goals in 7 games. Real return to form for him and for Cesc.
Yeah. Should they try and hang on to Gus Hiddink? Because the Italian papers, James, as you know, full of stories that Conte, Antonio Conte, Italy manager, former Juve manager, is in a pretty advanced state of talks with Chelsea to take over his dream job, I keep hearing.
Well, I think one of the reasons why he left Juventus was because he wanted to go to a club that had the resources that could challenge for the Champions League, which was the thing that escaped him. Juventus didn't really get near it. You know, remember he said he can't go into a 100 euro restaurant with only 10 euros in your pocket. Aww. And Allegri made him look a little bit foolish last season. If you look at the profile of managers that Chelsea have had, yeah, Mourinho, they then look at Simeone. Conte's definitely of a similar profile in terms of intensity with which he plays, that sort of thing. Lots of talk that Michael Emanalo was at the Juventus game one of Conte's representatives, Federico Pastorello, was there, and I think Pastorello's here at the moment. I think he's come back with Emanalo.
I've got a question. How does Conte's involvement in the ongoing match-fixing trial, how does that impact on Chelsea?
That hasn't really been picked up here, has it?
Because he's still facing charges over that, isn't he? Over the fact that when he was manager of Siena, not that he directly did anything, at least this is my understanding, but that he failed to report when he became aware his players were up to no good.
Yeah, and the witness who's come out against him and has been completely discredited, that witness, for some reason, his testimony still holds weight in this. And that's Conte's big issue, has been trying to get this struck off and basically be exonerated. And instead, it's dragged on and on and on, and it has risked being a shadow over their European Championship preparation. And it's also been one of the reasons why he's on some occasions threatened to resign from his position with Italy. But to go back to the original question, which was about Hiddink, a lot of the players, John Obi Mikel, no less, who has obviously come into the team and has been playing quite regularly, saying, why not keep Kuz? He's been an improvement, much better atmosphere among the squad. We've seen some of their best players from last season returning to form. So, would it be a bad idea to keep Kuz?
I don't know. Is that an option? Is that on the table?
I don't think it is. I think he's said, he's basically come in for a short-term thing, do the same job that he did last time.
Yeah, I don't think he's interested. I don't think the club feel he's quite up for it.
All right.
But don't forget that Chelsea players have always liked coaches who leave them alone, because they're used to being not left alone, and it gets quite stressful. So when the likes of Hiddink or Ancelotti come in, there is usually a bounce back, but it's not always sustainable because that lack of intensity tends to tell.
It's like when we have producer Pete take over when Ben's not.
It's just slack, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's still Simeone that they'd really like, but he won't commit till the end of the season. Is that right?
Apparently so.
Mm. Also, AS Roma Lupi says, how do you think he would do if Conte takes over at Chelsea? And who would take over as the Italy coach?
I think the publicly the Italian Football Federation are not willing to countenance yet that Conte's going. But I think they are beginning to brief privately that they would like Roberto Mancini.
Because he had such a terrific relationship with the national side.
Yeah, as a player. Or it would be an older, wiser head. In the past, it looked like it was going to be Guidolin or Ranieri, but both are now working in the Premier League. And now, Giampiero Ventura.
Wow, that's not a bad shout.
Yeah.
Exciting brand of football. All right, well, unless there's anything else, Barry, James, Rafa.
There's lots. There's a FIFA election tomorrow, Friday.
That's true.
Sheikh Salman's expected to win, which would basically signal the end for FIFA, I think, altogether. According to Owen Gibson, who's over in Hotel du Lac this week, and he doesn't seem to like football. He's warned Swiss and American authorities to quit their PR stunts because they're making FIFA look bad. He's consistently ducked any kind of public debate. He doesn't think FIFA under Sepp Blatter did much wrong. He threatens anyone who asks questions about his involvement in identifying footballers and athletes involved in the Bahrain uprising in 2011. And it's been reported like that 150 of them were identified by a committee he led and put in jail. Some of them were tortured. A lot of them remain in jail. He denies having anything to do with it just before he sends me a letter. And
I don't think it'd be a letter he'd be sending you, Barry.
And looks like he's going to be the next president of FIFA. So
in some
that's
ways,
all great.
In some ways, is it better to just have the worst case scenario candidate win so that effectively we can just do what needs to be done and dissolve the entire mess? I don't know.
We already had that.
Anyway, well, I look forward with interest to seeing who triumphs on Friday. Right now, though, we're going to head off to do our Europa League goals show. Barry, if you're interested about 999, may I give a little
steer towards Jimbo Vision?
On your
YouTube channel,
there is a review of 999, which I reckon has been unfairly treated by the critics, but hey, what do I know? I have got a question for you though, Rafa, which is, what do they call 999 in German?
I don't get it.
I bet you do though, don't you, listeners? Anyway, have a chuckle over that. We'll head off for the weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday.